Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We have a lot of content to go through that we want to wrap up because I want to kind of dive into some other topics. But what we're really trying to focus on, folks, is setting what I call the precedents, because there has been, I'll just say that when the framers created our constitutional republic, they set sail on a path and they maintained an example. Maintaining an example is very important. Why is it important? Because they actually set, I'll use the word again, precedence. I don't like using the word precedence, by the way, because most people think that that's in a legal context, that if you do this and set precedence, then it's absolutely okay to start swaying changes and paradigms changing in the Constitution and so forth. And precedence sets forth towards case law and so forth, where there is no allowance for precedence within rulings for the court to be able to move what is constitutional, what is not constitutional, such as abortion. Oh, well, there's precedence because the Supreme Court ruled on abortion. Well, no. The Supreme Court overstepped its bounds. There's no such thing as precedence. It's either in the Constitution or it's not in the Constitution. But what we want to do is we want to kind of give you what I believe is the essential information of how the framers took lead of this republic, what they did and why they did it that way. And so what's really important at this point in this juncture, after going through the ratification debates, after going through what I believe is what Jefferson and Madison did as Republic Review, and after going through a lot of other content such as the vetoes and so forth, we're right now focused on the bounty payments for the cod fisheries of February 1792. The reason we're going through this is because there has been a lot of damage done to our constitutional republic and overreach by the federal government in using the General Defense and Welfare Clause. And so what we need to do is we need to make it or prove to you beyond a shadow of a doubt that the General Defense and General Welfare Clause, the preamble in Section 8 of the Constitution, is not a portal for them, for the federal government, to be able to do anything that they wish to do, because they think, well, it's for the general welfare. So whether that be welfare, health care, whether that be subsidies for government or for insurance, or I should say subsidies for corporations from government, or even subsidies to states. The general government, the federal government, does not have the authority or the power to actually give to one state over another. They are constrained by the Constitution. Even within that first preamble, one of the things, and the most important thing that comes out of the preamble, is the uniformity clause. Excuse me. As we've talked about this, I think in several cases and in several points, and as I've gone through this, I actually, you know, point this out because it's the very last thing that all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. In other words, all burdens placed upon the states and all benefits, I mean, it goes without saying that all burdens, but even benefits, all have to be done uniformly. They just can't bless one state over. It's almost like violating the Commerce Clause, because the Commerce Clause, as it was defined, And as I say these things, as was defined, what I mean is that when the ratification debates were occurring in a few of these states, every single one of these issues were discussed and clarified. Now, that doesn't mean that it's only applicable to the one state. It's applicable to all because all states have equal footing and are to be treated uniformly. The federal government, just because one state said, we've nailed this down here, it applies to all. It is not a compact that says, well, if you actually, you know, create a good wedge to defend against our usurpations, then only you are protected. That is in the similitude or the concept of, well, Texas, because they came into the union differently, or Virginia came into the, they may have thought they came into the union differently, but they actually can't be different, and the federal government cannot treat them differently. Now, some people say, well, Texas has the ability to secede. All states have that exact same ability because it is a compact. Because if any terms of the compact, and as Madison states this in the Federalist Papers as well as in several other documents, and I'm trying to think, I think he even said it during the ratification debates, that when one small term of a contract is violated, then the parties, either party or in the compact, all parties then have the ability to actually negate the contract and walk away. They have that ability. I've said this many times before. They may have the ability, but they have an obligation to the tranquility of the union to try to rectify all of these problems, all of these discrepancies, all of these, what's a better word for it? Is there a better word? Whether it be a perception, whether it be reality, they have an obligation to try to rectify, to create harmony. It's almost like, you know, yeah, sure, in today's age, a person can get divorced at the drop of a hat. But they owe it to that party, their spouse, all the due diligence and effort in trying to resolve and go through mediation, go through counseling, try to figure out if these issues are really irreconcilable, not just, you know, a hot emotion at the time. That's it. I'm done with you. I cannot look at you and I'm through. We should all have a higher obligation to the covenants that we make. And you got to understand a compact, a contract, a constitution, those are covenants between parties. And so let me just kind of go through the normal obligatory that we usually go through so that we can wrap up. And this isn't that long. What we did was we got through page one. We were really starting into page two. And so what I want to do is repeat some of these things. So I want to go through this really fast. The number to call in, if you cannot listen to this entire show, this is the number you need to dial, 605-562-4209. That way you can at least listen via your phone to this show. You know when the show is. It's 6 o'clock to 7 on East Coast time, and it's 3 to 4 on West Coast time. And you, Central and Rocky Mountain, just plan accordingly. And so this show actually covers the details and the information. And when you hear these words, this is one of the most important reasons why I actually read these comments, or not even comments, these legal binding documents and or these words that have been articulated by the framers in defining our Constitution and constitutional limitations and so forth. The reason why I read them is so you don't take my word for it. I don't want you to take my word for it. You should never take a person's word. It really bothers me when I hear conservative entertainers, take my word for it, folks. You know, the Constitution's complicated, and, it's best to be interpreted by us lawyers or what have you. You know, or we're going to interpret the Constitution as we read it, because there are a few, I hear it all the time from one particular, excuse me, sorry about that. I hear it all the time from one particular conservative entertainer. All we need is the Constitution, and our arguments are, can't be broken and so forth. Those arguments are broken all the time by evildoers, if you want to call them, men with avarice, or politicians, I should say, because it's men and women who have the designs to undermine, and they use and misquote. The only way you can clarify the General Defense and Welfare Clause is by going through these legal documents, such as the ratification debates and Madison's testimonies in an official capacity as debated on the floor, because as those things were established, if you go read these cod fishery bounties and Madison gets up and what he states and what we're reading through today, nobody refuted what he said. Everybody basically concurred, and guess what? The cod fishery bounties were put aside because they realized that they didn't want to violate the Constitution. Madison held, he was a force to be reckoned with. And the funny thing was, the very beginning, I'll tell you the story when we come back. We'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, so as I was saying when we were going into break, Madison was a formidable force, but he wasn't a formidable force in Congress in the very first meeting. As a matter of fact, there were a lot of people that tried to marginalize him. And one of the things that came forth, and it's actually very, very early on, Madison made the announcement, I think it was like May 26th, and they had just, actually, they started assembling, I think, in April, and they didn't get quorum until May. And so, and this was in 1789. And so Madison, once they finally had quorum and once they finally got started, Madison came forth, like I said, it was May 26th, and he says, I have this intention of presenting a list of amendments to the Constitution so that we can, you know, fulfill our duty and obligation to the states. And almost everybody chastised him and said, look, you know, why don't we kick the tires on this thing? Why, we don't need to do any amendments. We can just start driving forward. And Madison said, well, just be clear that there were states that actually issued, you know, very clear requirements that they wanted to see as amendments. And so they completely dismissed him. Well, guess what? The following day, or the, maybe this was like in early June when he actually made his announcement of trying to create it. And it may have been following. I think he may have made the announcement. And then a couple weeks later, he came forward and submitted whether they wanted to do a consider amendments as the body of the whole or a subcommittee, create a subcommittee to look and explore at the amendments. And everybody said, we're not going to do this. Well, the following day, New York filed its petition. I think it was, maybe it was Virginia, then it was New York. But either way, one day was one state, the next day was the next state. And Madison said, look, I mean, these states are serious. They want to see these amendments promised. If you don't want to see them have another convention, he was very clear. He understood the dangers of, most people don't understand, and there's a big misrepresentation between the John Birch Society of the conventions back then and Madison's paradigm to today. Madison knew firsthand exactly why he did not want to see another convention, because he knew Patrick Henry, Clinton, and there were others that did not want to see the federal government have the power to direct tax and have the powers that they were taking from the states. The states wanted to maintain a greater autonomy and not delegate their militias to the federal government. That, I mean, Mason was really clear. Mason did not want to see the federal government have such controls over the militia. And I like pointing out to people that that was never amended, that the federal government and the states have this constitutional responsibility and obligation of maintaining the militia. But anyway, the whole point was that Madison really became a formidable force because people recognized, and after they got the work done on the Bill of Rights, and I think it's December 15th when they finally passed it through Congress and the Senate, people actually lauded the Congress because they did the right thing. And a lot of people probably wanted to take credit, but deep down they all knew that it was because of Madison that they were, you know, the successes that they were enjoying was literally due to Madison by keeping them on the course of being the subservient government that they were supposed to be. And but it didn't take long for all of these evildoers like Hamilton with the Assumption Act and Livingston with this cod fishery bounties and others, people were trying to take chinks or take nicks and cuts out of the Constitution to say we can take all this money and we can use it for this and use it for this. And as Andrew Jackson pointed out, now that we're bringing in all of this money, we're going to pay off the national debt. Why don't we use it for these good things? Once we've paid off the debt, we can then start, you know, building a great highway system and so forth. The bottom line is, as Madison and Monroe pointed out, and even as Andrew Jackson had to concede, you have to delegate that power. If you don't delegate that power, then what the federal government is doing or what the general government is doing is plain and simple tyranny. It's arbitrary rule because it is not power that has been formally delegated by the sovereigns, which are the states. I mentioned yesterday, before I go start reading into this again, I mentioned yesterday republicanism. Keep in mind, because I've gone over this a lot, American republicanism is not just a representative government. It is a representative government that is representing the sovereigns that we recognize. We recognize that the people are sovereigns, but we have also recognized within our government that the states and the counties are sovereigns as well, because we do delegate to them powers and abilities to affect ourselves, because we're too busy in our everyday lives to have to deal with where do we put the stop sign on this road? Do we put a stoplight or a stop sign? How do we regulate traffic? So forth and so on. So anyway, as you know, we could use your help, but more importantly, I just want to focus on this. We need you to get involved. We're trying to give you all of the great details. Use these same documents, highlight them, underline, and then build on these premises that the framers have given us on a defined and limited government, and go out and seize your government. Be the leader that you should be. You need help. You want to get involved. You want to get it. Just start it. Okay. Just send us an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. We're here to help. info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. I do need to plug at least our coffee. Red State Coffee is our official sponsor. Please try Red State Coffee. Give us a call and let us know what you think. We would love to have your point, your taste, your judgment on Red State Coffee. We want to air those things. I want to actually have a few listeners call in and say, hey, I've tried Red State Coffee. This is great. I told you there was, I think it was a Chinese lady that called, couldn't make out what she was saying. And so we would love to have you call back and, you know, hopefully you can catch us or email me, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org, and we'll work out a time that, you know, I can help you through this, especially if you have a strong accent. And it's not just Chinese. I mean, there's some people, Southern, English, Scottish. I mean, there's some accents that are just hard to digest and or decipher, which may be a better word. But anywho, let me move forward because I don't want to run out of time again, and I do want to close on this. So one of the things that I want to start off with, and this is the very beginning of page two, it will follow in the first place that, and this is the, I want to highlight this, that if the terms be taken in the broad sense they maintain, he's talking about the people that are submitting this, the particular powers afterwards so carefully and distinctly enumerated would be without meaning and must go for nothing. It would be absurd to say, first, that Congress may do what they please, and then that they may do this or that particular thing. In other words, we're telling you, go ahead and do anything, but you can now do this, this, and this. After giving Congress power to raise money and apply it to all purposes which they may pronounce necessary to the general welfare, it would be absurd to say that the least to superadd a power to raise armies, to provide fleets, and etc. In fact, the meaning of the general terms in question must either be sought in the subsequent enumerations which limits and details them, or they convert the government from one limited, as hitherto supposed, to the enumerated powers into a government without any limits at all. And that's the government we have now. They have bamboozled us because people have not been reading these clarifications and definitions and how our federal government is supposed to operate. We've allowed them to tell us how they want to operate. So this is where we kind of left off, or actually this is the other thing I wanted to highlight, and this is where we left off. I asked the gentlemen themselves whether it ever was supposed or suspected that the old Congress could give away money of the states in bounties to encourage agriculture for or for any other purpose they pleased, if such a power had been proposed by that body, it would have been much less impotent or have borne a very different character from the universally ascribed to it, which is a limited government. Now, Madison moves on and says, the novel idea is now annexed to those terms and never before entertained by the friends or enemies of the government will have a further consequence which cannot have been taken into the view of the gentleman. In other words, even though we're entertaining these things, there's just no way they can go down this path in entertaining or actually even considering that we have an unlimited government, because it was defined to the states as a limited government. We will get back with this in our next segment. We will finish this. This is the shock value that Madison is good for, and I will get into that when we come back. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so what Madison is talking about, I'm going to reread this. The novel idea now annexed to those terms, which is the terms or the clause, the General Defense and Welfare Clause. The idea now annexed to that clause is that, you know, they can provide, and you got to remember that they were stating that in giving these bounties to the cod fisheries, in other words, giving them money and subsidizing them, they were going to be able to create sailors, fishermen, but supposedly sailors that they would have the familiar talents necessary in operating as sailors in a navy. So in other words, they were going to do this, and in some roundabout way, they would actually be kind of having a naval training program but having a commercial focus. It's almost like saying that we are going to have people in conducting commercial air flight and have the government manage and maintain commercial air flight with the premise that we're doing this, we're going to be training and creating a fleet of Air Force officers and enlisted to be able to serve their country in national defense if the time required. And so, well, that's well outside the boundaries. It's one, it's not enumerated. And just by making that assumption, if you're a pilot, can we compel you now to force you to become a pilot? You got to remember that everything was voluntary back then. They didn't have drafts. What they had was they had militias. And everybody was accountable to whom? Not the federal government, but to the states. And the states were supposed to have organized militias, not the federal government. And so it's the same thing with the Navy or National Defense. And so anyway, that was a real reach. But Madison goes on and says their construction would not only this concept of using the General Defense and Welfare Clause to be able to say, you know, even our administrators, you know, people that do paperwork and the people that do accounting and people that do all these things, everybody can be then, you know, brought in for the defense of the country, because obviously there's paperwork that needs to be done and accounting. And I mean, it's just this absurd leap. Anyway, Madison goes on and says, their construction would not only give Congress the complete legislative power I have stated, it would do more. It would supersede all the restrictions understood at the present to lie on their power with respect to a judiciary. It would put it in the power of Congress to establish courts throughout the United States with cognizance of suits between citizen and citizen, and in all cases whatsoever. In other words, by doing this, it expands. Remember, the jurisdiction is limited to the enumerated powers. Now that they can do anything and everything, this is how they assumed jurisdiction over everything. And they do not have jurisdiction over everything. They only have jurisdiction over the enumerated powers. This is how they got out of the bottle. Getting them back into the bottle is easy. It's called Republic Review. It would put it in the power of Congress to establish courts throughout the states with cognizance of suits between citizens and citizens, and in all cases whatsoever. This, sir, seems to be demonstrable. For if the clause in question really authorizes Congress to do whatever they think fit, provide it be for the general welfare of which they are to judge and money can be applied to it, Congress must have the power to create and support a judiciary establishment with a jurisdiction extending to all cases favorable in their opinion to the general government, in the same manner as they have power to pass laws and apply money, providing in any other way for the general welfare. I shall be reminded, perhaps, that according to the terms of the Constitution, the judicial power is to extend to certain cases only, not to all cases. I want you to understand what he just said, that the judicial power is to extend to the enumerated powers, to what they have jurisdiction over, not to all cases. But this circumstance can have no effect in the argument, it being presupposed by the gentleman that the specification of certain objects does not limit the import of the general terms. Taking these terms as an abstract and indefinite grant of power, they compromise all the objects of legislative regulation, as well as fall under the judiciary article in the Constitution, as those falling immediately under the legislative article, and if the particular enumeration of objects in the legislative article does not, as the gentlemen contend, limit the general power, neither will it be limited by the partial enumeration of objects in the judiciary article. Now, the judiciary article, and we'll get into this next week, the judiciary article limits the federal government, or the jury, or I should say not the jury, the judicial department, it limits them to those laws in the Constitution. I'm not just saying this. This is a very clear, or I should say this is clarified, and this is in Article 3, that the the courts, and it's right here in Section 1. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts in Congress and from time to time ordain and establish. So Congress can ordain and establish these courts. The judges both of the Supreme and inferior courts shall hold their offices during good behavior. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. It's, in other words, if marriage isn't under this Constitution, they don't have any jurisdiction. In other words, their jurisdiction is limited to all cases that fall under the enumerated powers, as Madison just stated. And so there are consequences, sir, still more extensive, which, as they follow clearly from the doctrine combated, must either be admitted or the doctrine must be given up. If Congress, and I believe this is where he starts, using shock value, because, okay, you're giving them power to create these fishery bounties, but if we go down this path, then, and one of the things that just absolutely scared the framers was that the federal government would seize control of education, religion, and those types of things. You have to understand that they valued the independence and autonomy of their religious consciousness, which is one of the reasons why the first article, you got to remember, this was 92, this was after the Bill of Rights had already been amended and ratified, or I should say the Bill of Rights had been written and ratified by the states. It was already part of the Constitution. This whole concept of, you know, individual conscience, that the federal government can't write any laws to actually, you know, encroach upon your conscience, your expression, and so forth. And furthermore, schools at this point in time were done and applied and administered by whom? The churches. The churches were responsible at the state level. And so everybody understood that they had the ideal system. And all of a sudden, he's going to use for shock value that they're going to be able to pull in these things that we would consider evil and abhorrent. And this is what he says. There are consequences, sir, still more extensive, which, as they follow clearly from the doctrine combated, must either be admitted or the doctrine must be given up. If Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. At that point, I'm sure there was a lots of people started making these, oh my goodness, and recognizing how close they could easily overstep if they violated the terms and the spirit of this of this preamble or this general statement in misinterpreting this. So anyway, he goes on and says, if they religion in their own hands, they may establish teachers in every state, county and parish, and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. Now, here's my point, friends, and this is why I want to point this out, because Madison is using this clearly as like, excuse the expression, a bee slap. You know, he's basically slapping down all of these people that think they can take latitude with the Constitution, saying, if you do this, this is going to happen. Pow, pow. And I love this because there's no doubt in my mind that the federal government had no, and the paradigm was very clear, they were not to touch education. They were not to be, you know, dabbling in the compassionate services that were being done by the states. So he goes on and says, they may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the Union. I'm going to repeat all of this, what I just started off again. when we come back from the break, because this shock value is worth it. And so we have, I think, all the evidence necessary of what they're not supposed to be doing, just in how he presents this. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue, to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic, as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so when you're arguing a point and you are really trying to, you know, put down and just stop for good anybody thinking that they can come up with a justification to do something with an organization, and you want to just lay waste to so that nobody ever thinks about revisiting this conversation again, in using the general welfare clause to be able to start, you know, using it for anything again. This actually silenced Congress for a good period of time. More so than probably any other time, when they thought that they could actually misuse the Constitution and this general welfare clause, because Madison used this this shock value. And so I'm going to re-repeat this. If Congress can apply money indefinitely to the general welfare and are the sole and supreme judges of the general welfare, they may take the care of religion into their own hands. They may establish teachers in every state, county, and parish, and pay them out of the public treasury. They may take into their own hands the education of children, establishing in like manner schools throughout the union. They may assume the provision for the poor. They may undertake the regulation of all roads other than post roads. I mean, the gas, I could just hear everybody going, you know, oh, no, we're not supposed to do that. In short, everything from the highest object of state legislation down to the most minute object of police would be thrown under the power of Congress. For every object I have mentioned would admit the application of money and might be called, if Congress pleased, provisions for the general welfare. My friends, it couldn't have been stated more succinct and clearer than by this good servant of the Constitution. And what he basically says lays waste to everything that the federal government is doing today. He points out that the General Welfare Clause is not this portal. He goes on and says, the language held in various discussions of this House is a proof that the doctrine in question was never entertained by this body. Arguments, wherever the subject would permit, have constantly been drawn from the peculiar nature of this government as limited to certain enumerated powers, instead of extending, like other governments, to all cases not particularly expected. My friends, he just pointed out that this was the only government ever erected that had been limited to enumerated powers, where all other governments, like Britain, Germany, and everywhere else, they had general powers to do anything they wanted to and do all the nefarious things that they wanted to get away with. Instead of extending to, like other governments, to all cases not particularly accepted. In a very late instance, I mean the debate of the representation bill. It must be remembered that an argument much used, particularly by a gentleman of Massachusetts, against the ratio of 1 for 30,000, was that this government was unlike the state governments, which had an indefinite variety of objects within their power, that it would had a small number of objects only to attend to, etc. Therefore, that a smaller number of representatives would be sufficient to administer it. In other words, he was saying here that the ratio of 1 for 30,000 was very clear, that Congress was not supposed to actually, a representative in Congress was not supposed to represent more than 30,000 people. This is a gold nugget, my friends, because if you understand right now, your congressperson represents almost a million people. It's about three quarters of a million people instead of 30,000. It is in the Constitution that it cannot exceed 30,000. He just clarified it right here. And how is it that they've done this? Because they've been bamboozling you, saying that this is what it means and this is what this means. And they would, and as long as they get away with it, they're going to continue to run this republic into the dirt and destroy it. Arguments have been advanced to show that because in the regulation of trade, indirect and eventual encouragement is given to manufacturers. Therefore, Congress have power to give money in direct bounties or to grant it in any other way that they would answer the same purpose. But surely, sir, this is a great and obvious difference which it cannot be necessary to enlarge upon. A duty laid upon imported implements of husbandry would, in its operation, be an indirect tax on exported produce, but will anyone say that by virtue of a mere power to lay duties on impost, Congress may go directly to the produce or implements of agriculture or to the articles expected? What he's basically just said, and if you're familiar with Wicker v. Fillmore, this is where Congress actually started taxing the farmers. It is true, duties on exports are expressly prohibited, but if there were no article forbidding them, a power directly to tax exports could never be deduced from a power to tax imports. Although such a power might be indirectly and incidentally affected exports. In short, without going further into the subject, which I should not have touched on at all, but for the reason already mentioned, I venture to declare it is my opinion that were the power of Congress to establish the latitude contended for, that this person is suggesting, it would subvert the very foundation and transmute the very nature of the limited government established by the people of America. And what inferences might be drawn or what consequences ensue from such a step, it is incumbent on all of us well to consider. With respect to the question before the House for striking out the clause, it is immaterial whether it be struck out or so amended as to rest on the avowed principle of the commutation for the drawback. But as a clause has been drawn by one of my colleagues in order to be substituted, I shall concur in a vote for striking out, reserving myself a freedom to be governed in my final vote by the modification which may prevail. And so if you go into all the rest of the details, clearly Madison has pointed out, he's given us some really gold nuggets in this. And one of those is that the General Welfare Clause, the General Welfare and Defense Clause, was a preamble, that the whole point of listing the enumerated powers behind that was to clearly to identify what powers Congress had in administering a general beneficiary for the defense and the welfare of the Republic uniformly, because that uniform clause was a part of the preamble. And clearly, Madison was using for his argument things that the federal government had no business, and everybody clearly understood that they weren't to touch religion, they weren't to touch education, they weren't to touch roads and all of these things other than post roads. I mean, he laid it out. He put it right out there, my friends, to actually shut down these concepts that, oh, the federal government can do anything and everything. This is very clear. They have no business doing anything outside of the boundaries of the Constitution. And the only, let me emphasize this, the only way we are going to rectify these problems and their insatiable spending money on anything and everything, running us into the ground with debt, the only way we're going to stop and change our direction is if we perform the audit of Republic Review, that we call out every single violation and get them back into the framework of the Constitution. Republic Review, it's not as if it is a debatable thing. Republic Review is the irrefutable path forward in saving our Constitution. It is the irrefutable path forward in saving our republic, in saving our liberties, and in saving our sovereignties. Those things that the divine hand of providence bestowed upon us in establishing this hybrid constitutional republic clearly is going to waste if we fail to take a stand, if we fail to apply the oversight necessary that has been endowed to the sovereigns, the states, to step in behalf of the people and to rectify all the variances and to rectify all of the problems that have been forthcoming from this general government. My friends, there is no other way. There's, you know, all the status quo that the John Birchers and lots of other people want to continue to chant. That is the path of destruction. The status quo in maintaining this direction, we will be subverted and we will be trampled. With that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we will be back with more good content to actually continue to prove that there is no other path forward than Republic Review. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.